Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, host of the Football History Dude podcast, right here on the Sports History Network. Now, before we jump into another sports history adventure, let me tell you about this episode's sponsor. We partnered with Rochester Sports Autographs, the largest JSA authenticated autograph distributor in the United States, where you can get deals on over 30,000 autographed sports collectibles. They even have film, music, and other entertainment autographs on the site, so there's something for everyone. Perhaps you're looking for a gift for Mother's Day, or maybe Father's Day. Heck, who needs a holiday as an excuse to give a piece of sports history to your loved ones? Or how about yourself? Today seems like a great day to add to your sports cave, right? But how is RSA able to offer such great deals on JSA authentication, you ask? Well, they do this by making deals directly with athletes, so there are no extra markups, and they choose to pass these savings on to the customer. All orders from Rochester Sports Autographs are top quality and shipped to your door with top authentication and money-back guarantee. And to make sure RSA knows that the Sports History Network sent you, we created a special link for you. All you have to do is head to shoprsa.com/SHN. Again, that's shoprsa.com/SHN. Head over there to get your piece of sports history today.
We sure are ready to talk about some football in this episode of the podcast as we talk about the Monday Night Miracle, the Green Bay Packers' first game, a Heisman-winning quarterback, and Heisman himself coming up in just a moment. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and we have the podcast that's going to go through all the football history headlines for the date of October 23rd in football history. And we'll get started right now. In 1903, October 23rd, Montgomery, Alabama is the place, and the eighth installment of the famed Iron Bowl took place as the Alabama Crimson Tide knocks off the Auburn Tigers 18-6. The victory helped the coach W.B. Blount's Alabama team reach a 3-4 record for the season, while Auburn coached by Billy Bates, on the other hand, ended up at 4-3 on the season, according to SportsReference.com's records. Then we go to October 23rd, 1921, Hagmeister Park in Green Bay, Wisconsin. The Green Bay Packers in their very first NFL game against the Minneapolis Marines. The website PackersHistory.net enlightens us on just how dramatic of an ending the Green Bay's first NFL game was. With time running out in the fourth quarter, the Marines had the ball in a 6-0 lead over the Packers. Then in one of the moments that the teams of the bottom side of the score dream of, defensive end Dave Hayes, great name, of the Pack recovered a fumble at the Minneapolis 35-yard line. A few plays later, halfback Buff Wagner made a spectacular catch of a curly Lambeau pass to advance the ball to the 14-yard line to keep the comeback alive. Then with little time remaining in the contest, running back Art Schmiel eventually plunged over from the one, and Lambeau's extra point proved to be the game winner in a 7-6 come-from-behind victory. The story gets even more interesting as years later, historian Jack Rudolph, a colleague of the Packers co-founder George Whitney Calhoun, wrote that it was rumored that some believe the Packers were admitted into the loosely organized league formed in the Canton Automobile Showroom on a conditional basis, and if they hadn't beaten the Minneapolis Marines, they would have been dropped from what was then the American Professional Football Association. Remember that most teams in that era, including the Packers, essentially scheduled their league games from week to week. How about that for a must-win, to have a franchise almost 100 years later? Now we jump ahead in time to October 23rd, year 2000, Giants Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. The Monday Night Miracle took place on ABC's Monday Night Football. The Miami Dolphins were not the most polite of guests to the New York Jets as they outscored their host 30-7 at the end of the third quarter. The New York Jets would not lie down quietly in their house, though, as they pulled together an improbable comeback with 4 touchdowns and a field goal in the fourth quarter and tied the game twice in the final stanza. The green and white kept on scrapping and eventually defeated the Miami Dolphins 40-37 in overtime on a John Hall 40-yard field goal. Now we go to exactly 4 years in the future. October 23rd, 2004, South Bend, Indiana, the 16th annual College Football Holy War between the only two Roman Catholic universities in the U.S. playing Division I football, Boston College and Notre Dame. The Eagles and the Irish battled all game long in this one as the game came down to the final minute of play. According to ESPN.com account, with 54 ticks of the clock remaining, BC quarterback Paul Peterson dropped back and then fired a 30-yard touchdown strike to Tony Gonzalez to give Boston College a 24-23 come-from-behind victory over the Irish. Notre Dame had been undefeated and ranked in the top 25 teams in the nation prior to the loss of their unranked opponent. It wasn't the first time Boston College had the better of the Golden Domers. As a matter of fact, it was the Eagles' fourth consecutive victory in the Holy Wars game over the Fighting Irish. Gridiron guys and girls, we want to hear about how you feel about the show. We want you to contact us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook at the Pigskin Dispatch. Give us an IM on there. And check us out on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. So again, pigskindispatch@gmail.com. Now here's a message from one of my friends at the Sports History Network.
Hi, this is John Gidley. Join me each Friday for a trip into the football attic, where I'll delve into forgotten but noteworthy stories of the National Football League. You're bound to learn something new or have your memory jogged each week. That's every Friday, only on the Sports History Network and wherever podcasts are available.
Now it's time to talk about some birthday celebrations and anniversaries of Hall of Famers. And we'll go to October 23rd, 1869 in Cleveland, Ohio. That's when John Heisman was born. He was an American football coach who was one of the top innovators for the game in football history. Heisman, along with Walter Camp, Alonzo Stagg, and Pop Warner, took football in their era and made it much better and a safer sport with innovations, rule revisions, and great procedural items that evolved and translated to our modern game of football at all levels. Heisman is credited, per the NFF's website, with helping to legalize the forward pass, originated the center snap, came up with the hike cadence to initiate a snap, and the very trophy that designates the top player in college football bears his name, the Heisman Trophy. John coached at various schools, including Oberlin, Akron, Clemson, Georgia Tech, Penn, Washington and Jefferson, Auburn, and Rice. He played every line position when he was a student athlete at Brown University. The National Football Foundation unsurprisingly selected John Heisman to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in 1954. Heisman passed suddenly at the age of 66, just as he was preparing to write a book on football history. It's too bad we never got to see that masterpiece, as I'm sure it would have been. We next go to October 23rd, 1914, in Pelahatchie, Mississippi, and we go to the player that may have one of the greatest names ever in football, Frank Bruiser Kennard, a tackle from the University of Mississippi, was born. Bruiser was voted as an All-American in both 1936 and 1937, the first player from the state of Mississippi to be selected to that honor. The National Football Foundation's bio tells how Frank seldom would leave the game, even when injured, proven by his 1936 season when he played 708 minutes of the total 720 his team was on the field. After college, Kennard went into the professional ranks of football as he was an All-Pro and played 9 seasons with the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Yankees football franchises. The National Football Foundation selected Bruiser Kennard to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1951. Our next headline is October 23rd, 1951, and it takes place in Midland, Texas. Tom Brohany of the Oklahoma University arrived into this world. Tom played the position of center for Oklahoma, and during the 1971 season, the Sooners led the nation in rushing, total offense, and scoring, in part to the great blocking of Brohany. FootballFoundation.org's website tells us that as a senior, Tom was a finalist for the Lombardi Trophy and repeated as a consensus All-American choice. The National Football Foundation selected Tom Brohany to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2007. After graduation, Tom entered into the NFL, playing 9 seasons with the St. Louis Cardinals. Our final Hall of Fame birthday takes place on October 23, 1962 in Manchester, Maryland. And Doug Flutie, a quarterback from Boston College, had his father handed out the cigars upon his arrival into this world. After high school, Doug stood 5'9" tall and was considered by some to be too short to play quarterback in major divisions of football. What he lacked in size, he had in heart, smarts, and a natural ability on the gridiron. Boston College gave Doug a scholarship late, coercing the youth to choose BC over the University of New Hampshire. According to the NFF, Flutie would not give up on his dream of being the Eagles' starting quarterback, even though he was fifth on the depth chart as a freshman. Through hard work and determination, by week six of the season, Doug Flutie was the starting QB of the Boston College and ended up number nine in the nation in passing. By the time he was a senior, he had won the Heisman Trophy and took Boston College to multiple bowl games when they had not been absent from them for over four decades. Doug Flutie entered into the College Football Hall of Fame in year 2007. After college, Flutie embarked on a long, hard-fought road in a 21-year professional football career as he played in the USFL, the NFL, the CFL, where he was a six-time CFL Player of the Year, before returning to the NFL with the Buffalo Bills. I'm looking out at the defense, and I got backers crowding the line. I'm going to call an audible and get on out of here. Tune in tomorrow for more Pigskin Dispatch. If you want to contact us, we're at pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and we'll see you tomorrow, folks. We encourage you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, and hit us up on your email, pigskindispatch@gmail.com. See us on Twitter and Facebook, too, and subscribe to this podcast. We'd love to hear from you.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, the host of When Football Was Football, here on the Sports History Network. I'm very pleased to announce that I will be partnering with the Sports History Network to give away two copies of my latest book called Bears vs. Cardinals, the NFL's Oldest Rivalry. To enter, just head over to the following link, sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. We hope you'll enjoy the numerous stories in the book, which is largely based on the newly released Dutch Sternemann collection at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Dutch was the co-owner of the early Chicago Bears with George Halas and kept correspondence, financial records, and scouting reports, which now allow us to peek into the management of an NFL club during the first few years of the league's existence. Along the way, we'll meet unusual gridiron characters from years gone by, including a quarterback who could throw the ball farther behind his back than he could throwing it forward, a Bears lineman who was such a good tavern fighter that he decided to enter the boxing universe, and a Cardinals halfback who gave up the NFL rushing title by deciding to not show up for his team's final game of the season. And can we forget the time the Al Capone mob interrupted a Bears-Cardinals game? The new book was fun to research, and I hope you will enter our free contest today. Once the winners are selected, we'll be in touch regarding shipping as well as to inscribe the book personally for you. This might make a perfect gift for Mother's or Father's Day, or simply add it to your own personal collection. Once again, enter by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you, and good luck!